And good morning to everyone. Our first case this morning, actually there are two combined for argument, State v. Gerard Bridgeford and State v. Judith Bridgeford. Is it Ms. Yoakum?
Good morning, Chief Justice.
Good morning to you.
Good morning, Justices of the Supreme Court. My name is Jessica Yoakum, and I represent the appellant and defendant, Gerard Bridgeford, in this matter. First, as a procedural matter, I am here with, I believe this case has been consolidated with Mrs. Bridgeford. So therefore, my understanding is we have 10 minutes combined. I would ask that I take the first five and have my co-defendant counsel have the remaining 5 minutes.
That would be very good. You may proceed.
Very good. Originally, when we first filed this appeal, the case of State v. Gill had yet to be decided. And that case is important because it involves the statutory speedy trial issue under 29-1207-4B as to whether it, we read the holding as whether it's continuous, whether indefinite or definite, will set out a permanent waiver of that statutory right to a speedy trial. I believe that was confirmed under Gill. However, at the time we filed the appeal, we believe we had a pretty solid argument under the statutory speedy trial issue. So therefore, I wanted to focus on the constitutional issue, and that's the constitutional Sixth Amendment right as applied to the state, as originally found in Clocker versus North Carolina back in 1971, I believe. And I believe the Gill opinion pointed to the fact that just because that there was not the ability, or they didn't find for Gill under the statutory scheme, didn't mean that he was foreclosed from presenting a constitutional argument under the Sixth Amendment of the United States Constitution, as well as Article 1, Section 2 of the Nebraska Constitution. Basically, this case goes back. I don't think there's too much dispute among the facts and the procedural travel of this case between the state and the defendants. The information was filed back in June of 2014, alleging 15 counts for my client of possession with marijuana with intent to distribute, and five of those counts were directed towards minors.
Counsel, before you go on, let me ask you, there's precedent from the Court of Appeals. We've not, at this level, expressly weighed in, but there's precedent from the Court of Appeals where there is no non-frivolous statutory speedy trial issue that's raised. A constitutional speedy trial issue has to be await the outcome of the trial, and that there would not be a final order. This is, I grant you, a little different twist on this because, as you say, you didn't have the benefit of Gill when you filed the appeal, but now you do. When do you think the question of the existence of a non-frivolous speedy trial should be, a statutory speedy trial should be measured to determine whether we even have jurisdiction over your constitutional claim?
Well, since, especially since this involves a fundamental right of the defendant, I would look back to the time of the filing of the appeal. For that particular issue, I understand the issue of interlocutory appeals and final appealable orders. However, I would look to the facts and circumstances in the case law as it appeared at that time. Certainly, at the time that we filed these appeals, that we would have been able to go forward, so.
So you're arguing, in essence, that this would be perhaps a case of last impression in terms of this particular issue. You would agree with me that were it not for...
But for.
That, you would have to, we would lack jurisdiction and you'd have to wait until after trial to raise your constitutional speedy trial claim.
I believe that would be our position.
Your case is on direct appeal when Gill is filed.
Correct.
That's the procedural hook.
That's
right. And a new rule, regardless of whether or not it was constitutional, procedural, and so forth, is what you're...
That's
that wouldn't matter in your view.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
And going back to the procedural travel of these cases, well, I will defer to my co-counsel, Mark Steele. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Steele, good morning to you.
Good morning, Chief Justice. Good morning, Mr. Rogers. My name is Mark Steele. I represent the appellant Judith Richford in the Coke argument. I also will inform the court that I was the attorney in the State v. Gill case last month. So that is twice in 2 months, and that's more than my entire career before that point that I've appeared before this Supreme Court. As far as a procedural matter, it is correct that this matter, was a notice of appeal was filed actually even before the notice of appeal for the State v. Gill case. Because of the briefing schedules and the arguments for consolidation, this matter lagged behind the other. I would submit that in response to the questions asked by my co-counsel for the co-defendant that our constitutional claim procedurally here because of those. And as I said, State v. Gill seems to have decided the issue of the statutory scheme and how the speedy trial rights are calculated. With regard to the constitutional issue, I would kind of state to the court that this matter, as far as the timeline, was filed on June 3rd, 2014, and through a series of pretrial hearings and continuances for discovery and other ongoing pretrial motions, the matter appeared in April 25th of 2016, where we were ready to set for trial at that point. All of the time for the discovery was due to the fact that there was 20 to 25 witnesses. We had 15 claims or counts against the co-defendants. And to get that the discovery done, it took approximately that time. In April, when we had the status hearing and the court requested the matter be ready to proceed to trial, the court had a discussion with counsel in the state as far as how long they would take to anticipate to take a trial, and they estimated, I believe, 5 days. And the court said, we'll set a trial date. The next day, the court order came out setting the trial for December 12th of 2016, almost 8 months from the date in which we were ready to go to trial. We claim that that's a constitutional violation of the rights to a speedy trial, in the sense of the delay it takes to, from that time to ready to proceed until the actual trial date.
Counsel? One of the four factors that you weigh is the reason for the delay on the constitutional challenge. When I look at the record, it appears to me, and this is an approximate number, but between continuances filed by the defendant and pretrial motions, there was approximately 8 continuances by the defendant. Wouldn't that strongly suggest the reason for the delay was the defendant?
Well, Your Honor, when looking at the it was obvious the defendant was preparing for the defense of the trial.
But how do you hold that against the state, that you wanted to do and do your job well? How does that hold, why should we hold that against the state?
It's not that we're holding the fact that it took that period of time to prepare for the trial. It's upon preparation and proceed to trial, the court and the state, this matter was scheduled almost 8 months later. That's longer than the 6 month statutory period if they had just filed the information. The state has a statute of limitations period to file a claim from the time they begin to become aware whether it's an investigation or arrest. The state does their investigation and their scope of their discovery before even filing the information. The defendant doesn't have that opportunity until the information is filed and the discovery is disclosed, and that takes some time on the defense to prepare the defense to get ready for trial. When you are weighing the balance of that, the time for the defendant's preparation of trial versus just sitting there waiting for the court date, there were no further steps that were needed to be completed for that trial. I think that constitutes an unfair delay and a prejudice to the defendants to have to wait that amount of time. They are still under the indictment and the information and charged with the multiple felonies and have to bear that consideration for that entire 8-month period of time. So we think that it violates in that balancing test.
Do you have some case law that you can cite to us that 8 months would be a constitutional violation in any way?
There is no case law, directly on point. I would point out, I think it was cited actually in the brief of the appellant on Gerard Ridge for the Cox case, which talked about that there was a constitutional issue where there was a delay in 4 months in terms of that, and that was cited in the brief of the appellant. I am not aware of any other case law as I stand here about a specific time limit. We just feel that in conclusion, Your Honor, that the defendant's constitutional rights to a speedy trial were violated. The trial court erred in its decision denying that motion for absolute.
Counsel, before you sit down, was your client out on bond pending trial, or was he in custody?
It was my client with Mrs. Grisford, and they were out on bond.
Both of them.
Yes, and I don't know exactly at what point.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Duffy. Good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel, I'm Siobhan Duffy, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the appellee, the state of Nebraska. Both of the appellants raised statutory and constitutional speedy trial claims. I'm going to kind of switch things around here and address the statutory issue first. I think it seems everyone is in agreement that based on this court's recent decision in State v. Gill, there was a continuance requested that was granted, at the request of the defendants that extended the trial date to a time outside the 6-month period, which pursuant to the statute acted as a permanent waiver of the statutory right to a speedy trial. Turning to the constitutional speedy trial claims, last month in State v. Gill, Justice Castle raised the issue that this court has never required specific findings on from a district court when overruling a constitutional speedy trial claim. And in these cases, the state had initially filed a suggestion of remand for the specific purpose of the district court making specific findings on those constitutional claims. The state had been relying on a 2015 case from the Court of Appeals, State v. Johnson, in which the Court of Appeals, had remanded a case back to district court for specific findings on the constitutional speedy trial claim. However, based on this court's jurisprudence, specific findings were not required. So turning to the merits of their constitutional claims, the state, as argued in brief, does not believe that either appellant can show a constitutional speedy trial violation. While the information in this case was filed in June of 2014, setting aside a small period of time in January of 2015, the entire period of delay from August 2014 until at the very least April of 2016 is entirely attributable to the appellant's pretrial motions and continuances. So the state does not believe that appellants have shown that their constitutional speedy trial rights have been violated.
Appellants seem to be concentrating on the 8-month period before the trial could take place. What do you say about that?
Well, Your Honor, I think with the four factors, the balancing test, I think that 8 months is certainly, a period of time. There's nothing really in the record for the reason for that delay, aside from the district court's statements that it would need to look at its trial calendar and find a time when it could fit in a 5-day trial, because the district court's jury sets were for 3 days. I think with the factors, the court looks at the reason for the delay, the defendant's assertion of the right, the length of delay, and the prejudice to the defendant. And along with the prejudice factor, courts will look at preventing oppressive pretrial incarceration, which appellants were out on bond, as counsel just stated to this court, minimizing anxiety and concern of the defendant, and limiting the possibility that the defense will be impaired by dimming memories or loss of exculpatory evidence. Appellants didn't really assert this right until 2016, nearly 2 years after the information had been filed in this case, and they did not allege that any prejudice from this in their arguments that I can recall to the court. I think it was really just appellant's arguments focused on the length of the delay. And when looked at in the totality of the case, just balancing it with when the information was filed, all the delays up to this point, the state does not believe that they've shown a constitutional violation.
What did the court find? Did the court just overrule the motions for absolute discharge?
The court noted that a motion for discharge had been filed on October 17th, and that motion stated it was being brought pursuant to the statutory and constitutional rights. The court's order focused heavily on the statutory issues, and then at the end of the order stated defendant is not entitled to absolute discharge. I believe in Gill, this court considered that an implicit overruling of the constitutional claims. Unless there are additional questions from this court, we would ask that you affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on to the next case of the day, which is State versus.